Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So I encourage you to speak loud and speak often, and let us know what students are thinking, just so it helps us to formulate policy. So when your time comes, when we call upon you, please, please speak up. We don't bite. We're very encouraging. We're very supportive. So welcome aboard, and I'm glad to have you.
Thank you.
Okay, and I am Sharon Belton Cotton. I talked with you earlier. I had her principal call her up and introduce, make the acquaintances, and she's aware that I am the board member for the school district that she's in, which is the Ferry School District, and I am looking forward to working with this young lady, and I'm looking forward to hearing the voices of our young people, particularly in this particular time in history. I would like to share with you, I don't know if you're aware, that we do have a culturally relevant website. If you go on our buffalopublicschools.org, and if you look up under departments, under C, you'll see some of the work that that's being done. Dr. Brown Hall, I would like to put together an orientation package for her, which would include the information about each board member. You can add on ideas to this, but it would just basically include the information associated with all the board members, how to reach us, also the various departments that exist in the, or maybe an org chart so that you can see how things, who's who in the district. I would like for her to have a list of all the schools as well, and whatever information that we can come up with so that she can have a an idea of what's going on. I would like to take time with her so that she can have a copy of and understand what's going on during the board processes and things like that, introduce her to board doc.
What so I'm going whatever, to do mm-hmm. to that point, Ms. Cotman, because I have an email I'm crafting with all the important links for Ms. Walker, because a lot of it is electronic, and I will add the CLRI page to that also, but the board docs link, and then we can spend some time walking through that, all of the contact information and the bios of the board members, where she can access the org chart, the school list, and all of the information on that page. Because I think that's important for Ms. Walker, but I think it's also important for Inter-High, and she is the president of Inter-High, and I think our Inter-High students would need that information also. Speaking of that, I just want to let you know that Nicole Bicena is on the line also, Board President Cotman, and she's overseeing Inter-High this year. So we'll share that information with all the students.
Thanks, Nicole. We know we're going to get a lot done this year because you're a mover, groover. Thank you, Nicole. I would also remind Ms. Walker that we and Dr. Brown Hall that we want to put together her information on the website as well. Okay, and she shared some of the things that she's doing. So when we open up that page, we'll also see her bio information as well.
Absolutely,
young lady, board member. Do you have anything else to say to us today? I shared with her earlier that we understand that she may not be able to stay for the entire meeting, and we understand when she chooses to step out. But I think she's a little curious about what we're going to be doing today. So is it possible, Mr. Brown-Hall, that you can send her, I don't know what we can provide for her for the rest of this meeting, because she does not have a copy of our agenda at this point.
I will send her, I have her email, and I will send her the public link to Board Docs, and she'll be able to follow along that way. How about that?
How about that? Is that okay, young lady?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Ms.
Thank you.
Our board member, I'm very proud to welcome you. Without further ado, we're going to go back to our consent agenda. I need a...
our best president.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Cash, I'm sorry. I didn't see your hand. My apologies.
Okay. I would normally say move along, but there are some important items I'd like to bring up tonight to the board and to the community. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, colleagues, first, let me just start with audited financial statements last week. Are there any questions that any of you have from that meeting with our auditors? I did ask them to stay online this evening in case any of you had any questions. I didn't know if you did or would, but I would like to let them go. So if you have any questions, ask it now. Does anyone have any board member? Okay. I do think, again, I want to commend Jeff and his team for an outstanding audit last week. The final document will be presented to you in the next week or two, colleagues. All right, number two, colleagues, there's a number of pieces of work that are going on. I want to give you a reopening update. When I say reopening, it's a transition to reopening with a select population of students to start. And this is based on a number of factors that we take into consideration, both the science is always first for us, safety for all of our families and our children. We also have been looking at survey results. I'll give you a brief high-level view of what that's saying at this juncture. And then, of course, we look at what Dr. Darren Brown-Hall feeds into our cabinet and our cabinet works sessions around what the committee is saying, the committee membership. We also meet on a much more regular basis. Darren, I believe it's either weekly or biweekly with our principal advisory committee. And then we also are working with all of the principals as we speak. There's a really fascinating, fabulous professional learning community now that's much, much more synergistic than I've ever seen it. And that's among all of our principals and their teams. There are many, many teachers at each school site that are joining in this work and giving their input about how we should go about this next phase. It's a huge issue, colleagues, but it is one that we are planning for each day and have been for some time. I sent you a letter earlier, a draft of a letter that captured some of the essence of those points of consideration. We would look at our highest need students first. This suggestion comes from looking at models across the country, but also concerns that are shared by our principals and our staff about some of the things that they're seeing when they're working with students day to day. While that's not all of the students that are having difficulty, there are certainly some that are, and they're in tiers. We're tiering them in three tiers, and we're thinking about the most in need children, irregardless of their age, and looking at all of the schools. Now, that's unusual because that's different. But looking at all the schools and saying, principals, staff, team, if you had 50 to 100 seats to bring back, because I know that can fit on our footprint, what are your 50 to 100? And maybe larger schools have a little bit more, have a few more seats, smaller schools a few less, but so that we don't exceed 7,000 at once across the district. Who are these students? How are you selecting them? And when will you have a plan ready to ensure that we can begin to consider first starting with interviews of those parents and children, and then having them see a day in the life, and most importantly, asking them whether they want to be in a comeback in person 5 days a week, because that's what I'm proposing. Because to me, if you're high need, you need to be back. And do you want to send your child back? So that's the process that we're in and engaged in right now. And principals will be completing those plans within a week. I'll be looking at them on the big board, school by school by school, with all of my team. And we were hoping to bring, we would like to bring what we find and what our plan is to you as a board on your November 4th work session. And the reason I just wanted Mr. Hurd to be aware that while we don't want to have each session or each committee go an hour, hour and a half, we might need to cede some time a little bit there to combine one or two of you if you volunteer. Certainly makes sense for Kathy Evan Brown, maybe even Mr. Petrucci's committees to take a close look, but it'll be up to them as the chair people, so that we could have at least a 2 hour session to hear from me and hear from our staff about our plan for the next phase. Now, parent survey results. There's almost 3,000 survey results that have come in, colleagues. And again, I'm not surprised, but you need to be aware that between 60 and 65% of our respondents, I'm not sure it's a perfectly scientific, you know, capturing so that we can make inferences to all of the parents, but certainly those that have responded are saying that they do not want to return. They want to stay remote throughout the first semester, 60 to 65% of the survey results that I have. And then in the special needs group, it's between 40 and 55%. And in the ELL group that's responded, although we're still looking to translate a big number of those, it's around 40% to stay remote. So just so you know, this is not a big crushing, you know, wanting to come back to school in person by a big majority of our parents from what we have. If you're hearing something different, then certainly I want to know. I've seen letters or two, and I've had letters that say that they do want their children to come back, and we respect that. And that's why we're trying to prioritize how we do that and when we do that. But safety is going to be first. I speak every day to my health advisor. I spoke today to Dr. Gomez, and he was saying that unless we have a testing protocol in place for a good number of our students, particularly those that we come back and staff, that he believes that it would not be wise or prudent given what's going on in the country, given what's going on in where people go on a daily basis, and then how they start to come in and migrate into schools and so forth. So just giving you some of that. Now, before I go on, if I see a hand, I'll take it so that I can hear your question, but I have some other pieces related to this. But I think I saw Hope's hand. Hope, did you want to comment right now? Go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Cash. I would have been willing to wait to the end, but so okay. I find it very interesting, and in no way am I pushing back against statistics and actual survey, you know, information that was garnered through a formal survey. My information is more anecdotal and more, you know, just people who are contacting me via phone call, email, things of that nature, calling me, you know, saying, please, you have to bring the kids back. And as you heard the speakers earlier today talking and saying that they had very similar feedback from parents and from students who are not happy with the virtual learning. And in no way is that a criticism of you, Dr. Cash. I just,
no, I know.
In my you know, just in my daily goings on in my life, in my interactions with parents, in my interactions with my constituents, in my interactions with my friends, you know, in my interactions with my colleagues, you know, the overwhelming sentiment is we have to get these kids back in the classroom somehow, some way. And I know that you're not a wizard, you don't have a magic wand, you're not going to cure COVID. And my concern, obviously, is as we're sitting here having this conversation, the news cycle today is daunting and scary. It's saying that cases are rising across the country, more states are reporting more cases, and you know, the news doesn't look great. To have a you know, this plan that we want to bring students back, and at any point in time we're going to be told by the governor or by whoever that even if we have the best laid plans that we're not going to be able to do it. So, I mean, we're in a horrible situation. And I want parents to hear that we appreciate the pain that they're in and that there is no good solution here. Like, I don't know what to tell people when they call me because I am so empathetic and I'm so sympathetic to the conundrum that they're in, the conundrum that working parents are in. I mean, I know we're trying to triage. I know we're trying to stop the bleeding. I know that Say Yes has done a lot of things, and I think we should definitely bring that up in the context of a public meeting. I don't think a lot of people know about it. I've brought it up in court appearances. I've brought it up to parents. You know, people don't know that Say Yes is doing this and that they have these locations where they can leave, you know, their students if they have to work. So that's really important that we bring that up. I'm sorry this is a run-on sentence, but I don't know. Parents, they want something more concrete. You know, they want to know what the plan is. They want to know that we have a plan. And I mean, and we talk about this in this, I don't know, theoretical context, but yet we haven't actually provided people with something of substance. And I don't know that you have it, Dr. Cash. I just wonder if there's more that we can get, more hope that we can give people as far as, you know, what's going to happen next?
Well, thank you for that. Well articulated, and especially thank you for expressing the pain of parents and what you're running into every day. Certainly, I empathize and understand it fully. Did anyone else want to say something at this juncture before I move on?
Luke's hand is up.
Luke Petrucci.
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Okay. Who is I did?
Kathy, you or Luke? Go ahead,
Tamisha.
Luke.
Tamisha.
Oh, Tamisha.
Okay.
Tamisha.
Yeah, I will defer to Ms. Walker.
Ms. Walker.
Okay, so you spoke about high knee areas and them returning back to school. Can an entire class be considered high knee, like class of 2021. Currently, seniors are experiencing low grades and things like that. Right now, I'm worried about college application, community hours, senior dues, graduation requirements, grants. I don't know how to apply to those things. And my counselors aren't reaching out to me, or my teachers are reaching out to me as they should. Currently, we have a low graduation rate. And we have college rates that are low of Buffalo Public School students going to college. Time has already been wasted, and it's really hard to learn how to apply to college or to even fix a college essay online or not face to face. It's a real struggle to be going from grants to application to anything without the guidance you need.
Yeah, that's excellent, Tamisha. Certainly, I've made notes here, and I know that Toya Wilson and David Hills are on the line, and they'll reach out with you to you, and let's form a student group that talks about this, like a focus group, and gives us more feedback on how we can help you. So, Toya, you hear me? David, you hear me? Let's reach out and hear and work with Tamisha and her peers on some of the concerns that she's raised. Thank you, Tamisha.
I actually have a student group already organized. I took it upon myself before I was even elected.
And you know, Jen,
Yeah, I took it upon myself to create many groups. I have three different groups.
So proud.
Well,
yeah, I have three different groups.
That we'll meet with you, even if it's virtual. I want to meet with you. Okay. So, let me see, Darren. Or to me, or if Darren's not on right now, Toya, schedule a meeting for next week so I can be in it, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Mr. Petrucci's next.
Thank you. I just want to say that, like Ms. J, I've heard many of the same comments from parents, just all about the frustration. About how they feel that their children are regressing, about the difficulties with remote learning, etc.
I can't hear you, Louis.
I understand. You can't hear me?
No, that was not bad.
I'm sorry, that was not bad.
Okay. Wanted to say that I'm hearing from the people in my district many of the things that Ms. J is. I also heard with the same comment that Ms. Walker had brought up earlier also about seniors and guidance counselors, that they're just very concerned because it's such a critical year. I'm just going to add one additional comment. I know that we put a great emphasis on our site-based management teams and staff in our building developing these plans, but will there be a consistency across the board, a base level, saying that these are the basic requirements for all schools when they return back, and then what's going to be different is the amount of students in each building, or is there going to be more flexibility at each site?
It won't be an either or. It'll be flexibility at site, and we'll be putting an overlay of some district standards and requirements across this, because I still have to work out quite a bit of logistics, even around that, when it comes to transportation. How will these students get to school and come home and so forth? Because it'll be a whole different deal than what we normally do. So yeah, there's all of that's going to be put into the mix. But colleagues, just keep in mind, and I got some other things to say, but any day that you feel you're ready and you can take a vote to bring such many kids back, I'm ready to do that. It's you make the decision along with me. See, if you feel that your community is telling you we got to go back, even amidst all of what I'm seeing and feeling for our particular community, then let's have a discussion about it and then let's take a vote. Now, what I would recommend is that you first look at a plan, first see the plan, and then you can go from there. But I have never been one to do against what the board wanted to do. That's why I said each week you can provide feedback to me about what we're doing. We started remote that way, and now as we transition into this next phase, you can send feedback to us daily about what you're thinking and what you're hearing, and from how many folks you're hearing that from. You see, from how many folks. So. This is going to be a consensus decision, but what I do know is we are left on our own. We're not going to have any cavalry come help us or save us once we make whatever decision we make. Boston just went in with their plan, and 2 weeks later they've had to close down, and they're going to go the rest of the semester remote again because of the rising number of cases in Boston, and we're not even there yet, but it's coming. A second, third wave is coming here very shortly. We're heading into it, and I wouldn't want to open in the middle of an into resurgence. That just wouldn't be smart. So I'm trying to get the testing piece figured out and a number of other issues, and then I'll bring a plan, and then we can continue to say, what do you want to do, board members, based on your feedback from your constituents and so forth. We'll put it all together and we'll make a consensus decision. All right. Board President Cobman, did you see any other hands at this juncture?
Yes. Yes, sir. I have Mr. Scott, and then I have Terrence Hurd.
Okay.
Mr. Scott.
So just a few insights in regards to the survey. I would assume that is an accurate representation of where our parents stand. That it's 50-50. And I'll give it, before this meeting, we had a hearing on Tapestry Charter School, and they showed us the numbers, elementary, middle, and high school, and it was interesting to see that 50 to over 50% based on each level were at, those parents chose their children to remain full remote. You know, I don't know how that transcends to us district wide, but I would say based on the parents that I'm hearing from and from the survey that it's about 50-50. As far as the plan that you just, or the ideas for a plan, Dr. Cash, that you mentioned, I really think it addresses equity at this time and in prioritizing those students that need the in-person most. I think it's going to, there's going to be some unhappy parents that want their kids to be back, but I think this is the most equitable way to approach this. And as far as quality of instruction, I think it also is the best. I'm not sold on the hybrid model. I mentioned this in our last work session. And I recently said to my wife that if I had to choose between the hybrid models that I know of right now and a full remote model, I might now choose to have my children stay full remote because I feel like they would get better instruction, more direct live instruction from their teachers than if they're doing a hybrid model. The last point I just want to make is that I participated in my older son's SBMT meeting yesterday, and it was a very real, thoughtful conversation on reopening. And there was a consensus to begin with self-contained special education students, and 12th grade students were next, and then students that were behind on credits. And it was a consensus based on parents, teachers, administrators, everybody that was participating in that meeting. So I hear Tamisha mention seniors. So I think that seems to be resonating in some of our buildings as well, that group of students should be prioritized. And I like that we're not just basing it on age necessarily, but based on need.
Awesome.
Thank you for that. Sometimes the science has said the older students can be asymptomatic and yet carry this around much more so. And so maybe you wait until the end to do that. And I just didn't feel that would be right or fair. And then we always have prioritized the seniors. Last year we did. This year we have a special group. And that's why I want to meet with Tamisha and tell her what we are doing for seniors. And then if she has other ideas, we'll continue to bring those into play as well. Okay?
Okay, next we have Mr. Hurd.
Yes, I understand that this district has bent over backwards in trying to find innovative ways to support education for all, not just for high school, elementary, for all people, all gender, all races, all creed. I understand our equity clause and how we move forward. But I am upset right now because what I heard future Dr. Tamika Walker say was that something that I'm hearing during the Breaking Barriers meetings, I'm hearing something that through our youth groups meetings is the same thing and is disseminated over and over again. And work with my son, who's also a senior, is that they're not receiving the tools to move forward about filling out college applications and grants. Now, I'm working with my son personally, of course. And I'm working with some members from Breaking Barrier groups and some other youth groups that we work with throughout the community. And it seems like it's some of the kids go to charter schools. It seems like we're hearing the same thing over and over again, is that college is coming up. They don't know where they're going to go to college, how they're going to approach it. And I really want to concentrate on seeing a pathway for our seniors. If it's safe, first of all, we look at the word safe. If it's safe for us, for our students to turn back into the classroom, a few of them. I know you just spoke of having our students of needs reporting back to the classroom in a timely manner. Our seniors are due that respect also. And I think we need to look at a possible way of getting them back into a classroom or getting more attention to their collegiate aspirations. How can we get the applications, how she said, the grants. She talked about senior dues, something we didn't talk about. I don't know how that apply right now, but also how to apply for colleges and other colleges using Say Yes or the CESLR programs. This is something that we really need to concentrate on with our seniors right now because colleges are accepting the applications right now. this is the time when colleges are approving their children. And if I'm hearing another child come and say that they're not prepared, you know, for next year, I feel like I'm not doing my job. And I'm trying hard, you know, with this. And so we need to give more attention. Somehow maybe have a meeting to focus on this to so we can make sure that every one of our seniors have their opportunity, you know, to apply for college, make sure that we got their college preparation in. If it's the SATs or PSATs, the scores they need to take, we need to make sure those things are in order, the dates are in order. If it's going to be done in a building or online, we need to find those avenues, actually reach out to colleges for them, writing letters like we normally do for our seniors if they want to attend a college and have teachers write letters. Anything that we need to do to prepare for this, working with the guidance and the principals, we need to attack this aggressively.
Absolutely. We have the partners to do it, Terrence. I agree with you in all of that. So we will. That's what Say Yes helps us do every year. That's their work. Help us with applications and all that. Counselors. So I've been told that we're working on this, but if we're not doing it right, we'll get together and we'll have a meeting about it, and we'll get it right. I promise you.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay, but any other board members? I think everyone's been addressed.
If I could be included, I would like to know the future. I apologize. Just the future of where it's going. I'll just be included in probably notes sent about how we're moving forward, because there is a large number of kids that I'm working with that I am taking the time and I'm paying out of pocket, you know, for their college applications because families don't have money. It's just some of the things that we really need to look into and address immediately.
Absolutely. That's first I heard it, Terrence. I'll look into anything that I hear about, I'll look into it.
I said many times in the past. I mean,
okay. And let me let Toya speak. Toya, could you address some of this, please?
Yes. Toya. Good evening, everyone. As you know, I work very closely with the high schools along with my partner, David Hill. And we continue this work. We continue this work with our counselors. We continue to track our students, particularly at the senior class, to make sure that we're giving them the support that they need. If they need extra support, how are we doing that? We continue to do those very, very close-knit and student-focused cohort reports and cohort tracking meetings with our schools. We are engaged in that work right now. We're constantly looking at how we support students. Then we're looking at also how we accelerate students, provide opportunities for advanced placement so that they are presenting a transcript that's desirable to colleges. And then the counselors come into play because counselors are heavily involved in this work that we're doing to support our students day in and day out. And they're working very closely with the students to make sure that they get what they need. Each school has a different setup for how they are embedding that into the school day. For example, you may see it embedded into an advisory program in which the counselors work very closely with the advisors, work very closely with the English teachers and any teacher who would support the elements of completing the college application process. And that work is actually the work that should be the students are engaged in right now, because the college application process is right at our doorstep. And so we will continue this work, and we'll look at, are there any gaps that we need to continue to address to make sure that we're reaching every single student and making sure that every student has access to the college application process, writing, and so on.
Good evening. This is Chandra Williams-Ussel, and I do oversee the counselors. And, you know, the exploration process for college ahead doesn't start in senior year. It really starts in ninth grade, and counselors have been working hard to make sure that students have attended college fairs and are aware of different opportunities. But the application process, I think I heard Tamisha mention that the counselors at her school have, in fact, been reaching out to her, and I would dare to say that that's happening at all of our schools. But there is an application process, and counselors work hard to make sure that applications are completed in a timely fashion and that all of the requirements are adhered to. They can support students with identifying recommendation letters that they may need to support their applications. The scholarship process really kind of begins, like, you know, in January. That's when we start getting hit, you know, learning about different scholarship opportunities. But the counselors are working currently very hard with their seniors. I know that they prioritize them and that they are working hard to make sure that, you know, all our students have the information that they need to be prepared to apply for college.
Dr. Cash, you gave us your stats on each of these surveys, and what your own survey clearly tells you, anywhere from percent of our 33,000 students to 60% say they want to come back to school. So you've got your survey. It's consistent with what we're hearing. And I just feel that you just need to make your plan on who you're going to address first, because there's a lot of pain out there. And the children who are neediest and are falling through the cracks, the parents who are crying the loudest for me, to me, are the special eds. They're lost. I mean, I've got 12th graders getting ready to drop out of school and parents just desperate to help them. And then I hear and I agree that the seniors are critical. This is it for them. So, I mean, those two definitely. And then I'm getting a lot of English language learners saying they just can't make it because the challenge is too great. So you have your mandate. We do need to bring the children back. You said 7,000 to start, but with a 40% to a 60% figure, I think you're looking at double that. And we need to do something to stop the pain. We really do. That's all I wanted to say to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Miss. Are there any other board?
Ann Rivera?
So I'd like to encourage us to think in a couple different ways about this. And so one of the things is we serve a really large community with a wide variety of needs. And I think most of the comments from the board members and from Ms. Walker have shown us that tonight. I like the idea of a tiered system because it's a way in which that we can address a variety of needs. But the other piece that I really want to emphasize is that we need to ask who needs to go back, but we also need to ask who can we serve better via remote learning and in what ways? Because one of the things that Ms. J was pointing out is that working parents are in a double bind, right? So they have to oversee student learning and they also have to work. And we're starting to mobilize supports for that. That's one piece. The other piece are the students who are having trouble focusing in a remote setting. Dr. Mistretta mentioned that in her comments today with her own family. In different situations, I think thinking about our assets and our needs as we go forward, as well as the safety needs of our community, all of those things need to come into the mix as we decide who goes back and perhaps who needs more mobilized support in different ways. There's a huge learning curve to teaching remotely. This is not me criticizing teachers in any way. Teaching, I do it myself in my own classrooms, and I oversee other faculty who are learning to do it right now. Teaching remotely is difficult, and we're still learning how to do it well, even just as a society. And the question that comes to mind when we talk about the different needs and when we have a 60-40 split is that about who wants to come back and who doesn't, is that one of the concerns could be among communities that if they are continuing to go remote, then there won't be necessarily enhanced supports in place for them and for their students to address their various needs. And I think looking at all of that, as you say, Dr. Cash, putting it all on the big board is a really important thing.
And we will. Thank you for that.
I appreciate it. You're welcome.
Jan, did I see your hand up?
Yes, sir, you did. I also, you know, not piggybacking and not repeating anything anyone said, I really feel like this is starting to become, even in this conversation, an issue versus an issue, a group of individuals versus another group of individuals, who wants to stay home versus who doesn't. And that shouldn't be how we look at this. And I don't use the word should often, but I'm gonna at this point, because we are responsible as a collective, whether the district or the board, to create communication avenues to every single person who's out there listening now. And surveys are one way to do it. I'm looking for a way that the board comes together in order to maybe put out a message from the board directly. Why aren't we on talk shows? Why aren't we relaying this information that comes to us in our emails to the public in general? We do it, I mean, I don't know how Larry sleeps because he's constantly, he's a social media like guru. But, you know, I want to be able to communicate with the board and bring out a collective message of how the district is trying to attack this on all levels, right? Obviously, everybody's individual situations and circumstances are going to have them feel that it's them against the system. And that's not how we're approaching this. So I just want to bring to the light once again that the entire world cannot handle COVID. So there is absolutely no way Dr. Reiner Cash and the Buffalo Public School System can tackle this issue. And when we talk about, you know, as Ann, which you had referred to, I'm sorry, Dr. Rivera, which you had referred to, let's look at how remote learning helps some folks and how we can expand who the remote learning helps, how it's not helping other people. But what I would like to see is better communication for us to be able to communicate as individuals and as a group, as a board. President Cotman, if we can figure out a way to come together as a board, whether remotely, whether we do our own public thing over Zoom, just something where we can constantly engage and help to support Dr. Rivera and Kathy Evans Brown and Dr. Brown Hall, who are sitting on these reopening committees, because I'm almost feeling like they're being attacked. These reopening committees are happening in a frequency that hasn't been happening across the state alone, even in this region. But because it's not, certain areas are not being addressed with the fervor that people individually feel they need to be, it's now becoming an attack. So if we don't start really putting out there that we need to be working together, especially in this city and with all of our challenges and everything, and we don't come together on how we do it and communicate that that's exactly where you're coming from, Dr. Cash, that's what the board is looking for, then we're going to keep spinning our wheels, right? So I just wanted to point out in this conversation, we've done a lot of, you know, seniors versus students with disabilities and high needs, younger folks versus, you know, athletics and all of these things. It is not a versus. And I'm just frustrated because I just want to wrap my head around the whole picture and be able to provide the hope that Hope was talking about and do this in a way that we can collaboratively come together. So I'm just asking that we take all of our passions. You know, I myself, I have a student with an IEP. I'd like to know, you know, just personally, since everybody's putting this out there, what is the statistics for the students that are taking physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy? Are they doing well and thriving in the virtual world? I know my son is, but I have supports beyond belief for my son that some people may not have. So there's so many different areas we need to concentrate on. We just need to, you know, it's the bargain to me. It's the way you structured the bargain. It's the way you structured teams that work on individual things. Like, we need help from the community and the public to help us figure it out and not to point fingers. Enough with the pointing fingers. If you don't have solutions, I want to talk to people. And anytime anybody comes to me with an issue, tell me how you would solve this. Because if not, you're putting another issue on my head and I'm surely not going to bring it to the district because it's the same issue they're wrestling with. That's all I got to say.
Thank you for that, Jim.
All board members have had their say. I simply would like to say that what I would like to see, particularly from DPCC and Jessica Bowers, healthcare workers, is for them to start being similar to what you're saying, Jennifer, to be available or receptive to working together and not playing Monday morning quarterback. Okay. It's easy for anyone to find fault. It's very difficult to find solutions. And so what I'm asking those two parent groups to do is to come up with some ideas versus finding fault. For as many people who want their children back, there are parents who don't want their children back. And MVP recently did a parent drive. They did about 100 and plus new parents to their organization, to MVP. And they took a poll on the parents. And there were parents who wanted it, their children to go back. There were parents who did not. Okay. And it was consistent. So what I'm saying is that if your soapbox consists of finding fault in a time when you should be able to come up with solutions, then shame on you for not coming up with solutions to help us with this. Stop pointing the finger. Get in the game. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is not child's play. We have a lot of work to do. And your soapbox consists of finding fault 24/7. Stop it. We cannot grow as a district. We cannot grow our parent organization with that type of animosity that exists. It's tired. People are making decisions together now. They are not doing it separately. And they're not pushing against the grain. They're pushing with the grain. We have over 220,000 people who are dead. And those are the only ones those stats don't even represent the people who died from things related to that illness. Okay, so it's time out for finding fault. It's time out for moving forward and making things happening in a collective way. And if you can't do that, then why are you playing the game at all? If you can't make a difference, why are you playing the game? And yes, I'm calling them out because I'm sick and tired of the finger pointing. Since the time I've been sitting on this board, it has been consistent with finding fault, finding fault, finding fault. No, we're not perfect, but we are working damn hard to make a difference in the lives of these children. And no one is juggling 30 plus thousand children in this equation but Buffalo Public Schools. So either you're a team player or you're not. That's what time it is. And I'll be happy to have that discussion on an individual basis with each and every one of them. No problem with that. Okay. With that said, Dr. Cash, you had some other things you want to share. Oh, I'm sorry. Kathy Evan Browns, I'm sorry.
Thank you for that, President Cotman. I just want to add, my two cents, because Dr. Brown Hall has been doing a phenomenal job with this reopening for this district. Dr. Revere and I have sat in on many of those meetings, and it's a very diverse group of people. You have us as board members, you have teachers, you have administrators, you have parents, you have the two parents that spoke tonight on this reopening committee. So it's really a diverse group. And I find that they're very vocal in the group. People have suggestions, they put their suggestions out there, et cetera. But more importantly, I agree with Dr. Cash, if we're gonna reopen the 50-50 equation, we need to do it 5 days a week. One article on hybrid, the hybrid model, and it came out of John Hopkins. And I can't remember the name of it. I just kind of gleaned over it. But what it talked about was that hybrid is one of the worst models to use opening plan. And the reason for that, because if you think about it, kids are in school 2 days a week, let's say. Then they're going back out into the community, among other people, getting infected potentially, and then going back. So it's not really a great model. Then we need to look at, and most of you said this, base it on need. I agree, special ed students, some of the K through second graders need to be, and special ed, I didn't say that, need to be considered first in this equation. Dr. Cash said, which I like, with the principals, teachers, the administrators who know these young people, who know these kids. They know what the needs are greater than we do because they're in their buildings, right? Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I think we need to really look at the science. The science is important. And then there's also all these other logistics, because it's easy, like Dr. I think Sharon mentioned it, President Schottman, it's easier to criticize versus coming to the plate with some good information to help this district. So with all of that said, I think that, yeah, we need to, we have a plan. I think what it's going to do is increase that 7,000 that you talked about, Dr. Cash, to a little more than 7,000, particularly if you're talking 6540.
Thank you. Colleagues, if there are no other hands raised at this time, I'd just like to make a few more quick points, because I appreciate all of your comments, and I've made notes about all of them, and believe me, they will be integrated into our work. Now, code conduct, I had promised earlier that it would be ready about this time or November, mm-hmm. and Tanja Williams has done some really great work, she and her team, and it is ready for my review and for cabinet review. That she's got it for Monday. We're going to be doing that, and then we want to bring it to you. We'll not even bring it to you. I'm going to let you have it shortly after I review it for 3 or 4 weeks, and then you can take November to make your decision to approve it. You can certainly look at it again at the work sessions on November 4. And by the November board meeting, I would recommend that you approve, particularly focusing on the addendum work. So we'll mail or email out to you the addendum work that I think has been very thoughtful. Look forward to your further input to that. It's not that long. And then we'll continue to improve it. So I think talking to Tanja today, within a week, Monday, or sooner, we'll have it emailed out to you, and you'll have all that time between now and November to review it. Okay. One thing that we sometimes miss in this get back to school, there's a really, really important step, colleagues, in the science, in my humble judgment, and that is the testing. I don't feel comfortable with a federal policy right now of herd immunity. Despite what you may think that's crazy, but that is the federal policy right now. It is the policy, and that's what they're acting on. And so we're not getting the support as a result of that for further testing. The testing is actually decreasing, and we're certainly not getting any stimulus money or any funding for all of these pandemic schooling unanticipated costs. It's extraordinarily expensive to do some of the things that we need to do in order to make sure we can bring our staff and our students back safely. So I was having a talk with David Rust. We want to try to get a mobile health unit activated soon, up to 2 mobile health units. And Dr. Gomez and our medical director, Dr. Kuo, have volunteered to help with this testing, doing it for, you know, they will administer it if we can get these mobile units generated to go throughout our community a week before we start bringing back these kids, because I don't feel that I can safely say to you that we're good to go if we don't have some kind of data to say, you know, only these many have tested positively 3 days, 4 days before starting this new group. Because keep in mind, Dr. Kathy Evans Brown, yes, it may be a 75 or 100 students, but it'll be all of the workforce. See, we want all of the workforce to come back, to be in there for support for the kids that do come back first. So all of our food service workers, all of our teacher and assistants, all of our teachers. So that then increases the number that's on that school footprint. See, so we do have to consider that in making the decision too about what we can do safely with the 6 foot apart, everybody having a mask, everybody washing their hands and all of that. Because now you're down to 8 to 10 kids in a class, and that's much different than 20 to 30. And then on these buses, buses even have fewer kids. 70 student bus can only now take 6 to 8 students safely when you talk about the distancing and all of those things. Maybe a little more on the 75 student. So colleagues, this has to all go into the big mix. And certainly if you give me a mandate after seeing this plan that you want X number of students back, you know, even if we're in the middle of a raging situation, you let me know, and we will certainly abide by it. But I will hold out to you on the demographics and the data, because even in our communities, it's underestimated. Dr. Gomez told me that when you look at Erie County, when you look at Buffalo, yes, that's the metric right now, 2.4% infected, but it's probably undercounted when it comes to some of our zip codes that make up our student populations. So we just have to look at that. I don't want to lose a kid. I don't want a kid to be sick, as Ms. Cotman said, long term, from some of these underlying things that affect our communities disproportionately. And they're never right again. They're never right again. And it could be a grandmother, it could be an aunt, and so forth. So I'm sorry for being weighing on the side of safety, but I also will do everything we can to help these kids while we are in a remote situation, make sure these teachers and the staff are responsive and all of those things while we begin to plan for bringing kids back. But let's try to be together. That's the most encouraging thing I've heard all of you say, or many of you say. Whatever we do, let's try to reach consensus, and then let's try to stand by it as a unified board and staff, and that will serve the interests of our community the best. So at this time, while there were some other things I could say, President Cotman, I think I'll hold that, and we'll continue planning and get ready to give you that full plan update in early November, day after the election, after all of you go vote. So, thank you.
Thank you. And with that commercial, we would also like for our parents and our constituents to fill out the census forms, right, Lou?
It's too late.
It's completed. I missed it. Oh, I thought we had another day.
No, it's done. Sorry, Sharon.
What did we do? Do you know what percentage?
I think we're at 56%.
56%. Okay, we're going to be missing a lot of money.
Yeah,
I think that's better than the previous year, though. Sorry about that. I haven't been attuned to that. Okay, so next, I need a motion to accept the previous minutes from meetings from September the 16th as well as September the 23rd.
So moved.
Second. Okay, Larry and Lou. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Any opposed? No. Okay, thank you. All right. The committee reports. Does anyone have a committee report to report out today? Raise your hand so I can see you. I'm not going to call everyone around. Okay. I see Dr. Kathy Evans-Brown, then Mr. Terrence Hurd. I would ask each of you to limit your committee reports to 5 minutes, please. Okay?
Yes.
Thank you.
That's more than enough time for me. Okay, so the student achievement report from our meeting, our BOE work session held on Wednesday, October 7th, 2020. It was very robust. It was detailed, lengthy. I'm not even going to tell you how much time, but it was lengthy. It was a presentation and discussion. So under Dr. Cash's leadership, he started out presenting the 2021 school year update on remote learning and recommended next steps. And we've kind of like talked about some of that now. You have to excuse me, my grandson is visiting, so you'll hear him in the background. But Dr. Cash provided a snapshot of COVID facts today.
Sharon mentioned earlier that 221,000 deaths from COVID since it started. We're seeing about 200,000 contracts per day. So it hasn't changed because more than half of the states are reporting upticks in COVID virus. And often, you know, I know that, you know, we all want this thing to go away, but we have to remind people that this virus is alive and well, this city and across this country. So there is inadequate testing and tracing. You can't, you know, we're not a district that are in the position to test everybody. As a matter of fact, the health department say that they're not in the position to do it either. They're only testing people who show signs of the virus. And that's it. They're only testing people who showing signs of the virus. There's inadequate testing and tracing. So the Department of Health cannot accommodate universal testing. And I know I've heard parent groups talk about testing, random testing, et cetera, but it's not happening in this district or any other district. So let's see. So in order to be, well, the health department isn't consistent in this whole pandemic is evolving. Somebody mentioned that we're going to have a second wave. I think we're going to be in a third wave soon because we're seeing the upticks. So Dr. Cash noted that in order to have great schools, they include three variables: great leadership, great teaching, and great community support. I'm going to go back to great teaching because remote learning, remote teaching is very difficult. It's more difficult than in the class. Today, for example, a California teacher was doing a remote learning session, and she always waited for all her students to sign off. And the last students was a sibling group. I don't know if you heard this, but they had a break-in, and during the remote learning, someone broke into these kids' house, and you know the teacher called 911. They caught the pervert, but it was just so ironic. The man was in their house and ran through it, and thank God they were not hurt. Okay, so let me move on. So during this pandemic in the remote learning model, we see ways to strengthen these variables to emerge, transform public education. And as you know, public education will never be the same. And then we had Ann Botticello, Dr. Tanya Williams, Dr. Cassandra Wright, Dr. Fatima Moore, Myra Burton, our IT chief of operations. They all provided presentations about their work. And so it was very robust, et cetera. And I'm not going to go into detail, but it was a very thought out presentation with slides, a lot of learning going on. Some of my constituents talk about how remote is working for them. And then you have others that talk about wanting kids in school. So it's a lot to think about. It's going to be really interesting. I think it's going to be inevitable, and this is me talking, that COVID's going to get into these schools. So that is my presentation.
I really hope it doesn't get in our schools. Thank you, Dr. Kathy Evans Brown. Mr. Terrence Hurd, you're up next.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, first of all, I would like to talk about the Wednesday, October 14th presentation for educational support. During this educational support committee meeting, we talked about strong community schools and programming during the COVID. We felt that this is very important because Buffalo is one of those few districts throughout the country that has community schools. And And we have a very robust system here, and we have a very high number of pupils that visit our community schools and Saturday academies. On October 14th, this presentation was brought to us by Tanya Staples, the Senior Director of Community Schools for Say Yes to Education Buffalo, and also Alyssa Mufelso. She's the Director, Strategic Alignment and Innovation at the Buffalo Public Schools. They talked about a robust public school community school program, which is, I believe, has to be one of the top of the nations. We talked about that. I've never seen anything like this before growing up, and I wish that, you know, they had these type of programs coming up, because I know it's going to have a great effect on our children and our population, with our kids and other community outlets and programs working together to edify our kids and our community. A couple of the things that we talked about was the summer pop-ups. We talked about virtual policies and procedures. We talked about virtual program, and because of the COVID, we were in the building previously at our community school sites, which was 28 throughout the city of Buffalo. Then suddenly with COVID hit, you know, it was a shutdown. But we were happy to see that October 3rd, you know, the cabinets reopened and they addressed the COVID concerns. And with that, I would just like to be one of the biggest supporters for it, because our kids during the COVID times, I feel like they're very oppressed. They're in the house, they're in the homes, they're frightened, they're scared. And this is one of the opportunities to have a let out for them to reach out to other people, other community members, and also our parents. And our parents, you know, we also talked about that our parents, since this remote learning has been established in the city of Buffalo, and how we adapted to it and how it's become better and better, you know, for parents to understand the kids to work, that parents have been reaching out for education too. So they've been a huge part of this virtual process, and we thank the parents for, you know, being patient and learning along with their children and reaching out to the staff. Our community schools have now adapted, you know, to COVID, and we talked about our parent center offerings. We talked about our strong academic and innovative technologies that we using the virtual method, everything being online, but finding new ways to adapt to it, you know, so it's better learning. We talked about higher education. We work with our business partners. We also talked about the mental health clinics, and also preparing for our legal clinics. Now, if you want to participate in this, you know, you have to go to our website. It's on facebook.com. BPS Community Schools. And some of the things, you know, that we're talking about is supporting families through connected learning, building substantial student cohorts, virtual Saturday Academy with the parent centers and adult education. And the adult education addresses like our parents' concerns. So it's something that the parents, the children all can work on together. And it also talks about the well-being. And let's not forget our food drives. You know, this also... they give out food at these centers so that we can continue on, you know, so we make sure all families are, you know, health and wellness is addressed also. We talked about in April, this was one of our peaks that we had 8,000 visitors for the month of April. And then when the COVID hit in May, you know, it went down to, because we was only open for the first week, it went down to 3,700 people. And then in June, it was zero. But one of our peak months was December of last year, and that was over 8,660 people that came to our community school. So those were people that were left out when COVID came. So now they have opportunity to participate once again within our community projects. Some of the activities that they had was the virtual field trips. They talked about homeschooling and techniques and tips. The parent portal was reestablished. Health and wellness with like sickle cell groups, go bike, and then there was indoor biking, entrepreneurship, and teen series. So it's so many different things, and not limited to anything, because they also have anything from cooking classes to introduction to foreign languages. So, I mean, it's a very robust program that this district has put on here. And one of the big things that we see is the Doge Education and Job Seeker Suits, the virtual college tour, something we talked about today, but they have one right here in our Saturday Academies. And then one of the biggest things that, you know, that we used over with the Breaking Barriers program was the Fitness Friday. So they have Fitness Friday where the kids can work out and still get, you know, Zoom, you know, working out with Zoom. So please take a look at it. The next session is going to be on, they have a November 7th where they're going to talk about UB Science Exploration Day. And not last but not least, I know Dr. Cash will probably want to speak about this, is our virtual learning hubs. This is something new that Minister Mary Donaldson sat down and wrote with from ECC. He worked with Mark Holenkars and also with David Russ from Say Yes and the Bubble Public Schools about putting this program together. And I'm glad to be with him when he first started to write this, because it's a wonderful program, and it started October 5th through December 20th from 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, where we got virtual learning sites set up throughout the city of Buffalo. So I don't know if Dr. Cash want to reflect a little bit more on that, about the virtual learning hubs.
Very quickly. Thank you for that, Terrence. That's an excellent point. And I remember when Hope and others were talking about this some time ago, and then we put it into play. So Say Yes has over 40 sites across the city. I think many of them are faith-based sites and others. There's 1,121 students enrolled in those sites. This is mainly for 5 to 12-year-olds. And there's room for 1,400 more students to come and be in those sites. So let's get the word out, Elena, and board members, for constituents who are struggling at home. They can go to these sites, these virtual hub learning sites each day, and get online with their teachers from these hubs. So I think it's an exciting experiment, and I wanna thank Say Yes and Erie County government for their assistance in this innovation for our kids.
Okay. Well, that concludes. You can actually reach it by going to the Buffalo Public School webpage for parents that want to reach out to the virtual learning hubs. It's a great opportunity for your children to get extra attention that they need and take some of the stress off the parents and the caregivers. So that concludes my report for the educational support. And I'd just like to thank the district and Say Yes and Tanya Staples once again for doing a wonderful job, you know, for putting this program together and helping out with our district and our kids.
Thank you, Board Member Hurd. Next, we have up Vice President Lou Petrucci with our executive affairs, followed by Paulette Woods with finance and operations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At our executive affairs meeting this month, we had a presentation from Jamie Warren regarding the practices of with respect to the district and the results of our hiring, who we hire by division, by department, and what that looks like. Basically, Ms. Warren's presentation showed that we still have a lot of challenges to go forward, going forward, to make sure that our workforce looks like the city of Buffalo. While we do have some areas where we have where the workforce is represented or does look like the population, many areas, particularly with teachers, do not reflect the population of the Buffalo Public Schools. So I know that is one thing that Dr. Cash and his staff and Ms. Warren made a nice presentation about the various recruitment efforts that have been going on to try and increase our teachers of color throughout the district. But that still presents a challenge, not only for Buffalo, but other districts within the state and the nation as well. Going forward, though, because this was such a robust presentation, we were unable to address our NWBE hiring practices, and that will be for a future executive affairs committee meeting. Thank you very much.
Wow, go ahead, Mr. Petrucci. Next, we have board member Paulette Woods. Do you have anything to report for finance and ops?
Well, briefly summarizing, we had the finance and ops committee report. The auditors gave us the results of last year. You have to know what you ended the year with, which was good news. We came up with a $43 million surplus rather than a $30 million. So we didn't do a lot of things in last year, so we saved money. We saved more than we thought. That was good news. But then we got our report on this current year from our CFO, and that's the bad news, that we do have the state government withholding significant portions of our revenue. We do have a dilemma that we need federal aid to bail out New York State and the city of Buffalo, or we're going to have some difficult, disastrous choices to make. So we're hoping that that will change. And then we had a presentation on our grants, and we're going to follow up on that to see if there's any opportunities for efficiencies and more services to our young people and our students using grants. So short, sweet, there you have it in a nutshell. Coming up, we will be going over Title I, Title II. And again, like Lou said, there needs to be a report on MBE-WBE progress so that everyone who pays taxes shares in the benefits.
Thank you, Board Member Woods. Okay. Are there any other things that any other board members would like to share at this point? Okay. Thank you. So moving forward, I need a motion to accept the consent agenda. Okay. Okay. Paulette, Lou and Paulette, thank you. And Larry also. Thank you. I do not have any questions that were presented or any comments that need to be made during for the consent agenda. Does anyone have any concerns that they would like to address, or are all minds settled?
Ms. Cotman, there were none sent in to Lisa or myself, and the questions that were presented were answered and sent back to the board members this afternoon.
Okay, thank you. So if that's good, can we move forward with our vote, Mr. Nate Kuzma?
Yes, on the consent agenda, how do you vote, Dr. Kathy Evans-Brown?
Yes, no contest.
No exceptions from Dr. Kathy Evans-Brown. Mr. Hurd?
Sorry.
No exceptions.
Ms. Jay?
No exceptions.
Ms. Mosey?
No exceptions.
Mr. Petrucci?
No exceptions.
Dr. Rivera?
No exceptions.
Mr. Scott?
No exceptions.
Ms. Woods?
No exceptions, but we've got to do a lot better on the MBE-WBEs.
Voted for the record, no exceptions. President Belden Cotman?
No exceptions.
Consent agenda passes unanimously. Thank you.
Okay, so board members, we have two additional things that we need to do tonight. We do need to go into executive session, but first we would like to honor our bereaved members of our family, the BPS family. Mr. Lou Petrucci, would you handle that order for me, please?
Thank you very much, President Cotton. May I ask everyone to rise while I read our bereavements for October 21st, 2020? Thank you. On August 24th, John N. McGovern, former teacher of special education for 34 years in the Buffalo Public Schools, retired in 1998, father of Glenn R. McGovern, a teacher at Olmsted No. 156, and Albertina McGovern, a teacher at Olmsted No. 64. Brother of the late Nicholas J. McGovern, former director of health and physical education with the BPS, uncle of Michael J. McGovern, principal of the New Buffalo School of Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management School No. 355, and Nicholas J. McGovern, Jr., former special education coordinator and teacher, and also Len McGovern, a former groundskeeper at All High Stadium. September 18th, Janet E. Dombakowski, retired principal of Bennett Park Montessori Center,
mother of Richard Domkowski, grants coordinator for the Office of Federal and State Programs, and co-grandmother with Karen Campbell, teacher assistant at Bennett Park. September 18th, Joan Murray, mother of Mary Beth Murray, a media communications teacher at Buffalo Academy for the Visual and Performing Arts. September 20th, Teresa Puglisi, a teacher's assistant for the Buffalo Public Schools and Kenton Schools for many years. September 21st, Patricia M. Rettman, mother of Lori Rettman, administrative secretary in the Office of School Leadership, and Patricia Harrington, assistant director of student placement and registration. Also mother-in-law of Sharon Rettman, school clerk at 48 and MLK. Ms. Rettman was also secretary for my department for many years. September 25th, Donald Seback, retired principal of BPS School Number 8 for 25 years. September 27th, Elizabeth Ann Morse, former principal of BPS Number 94. September 28th, David Ryder, former CTE director. September 29th, Janice L. Fisher, née Earl, wife of retired principal Elsie Fisher, sister of teacher Jennifer Earl Strickland. October 1st, Kathleen Kalwicki, a retired school clerk at schools 61 and 60. She also helped coordinate the Jesse Ketchum Awards. After she retired, she volunteered at the Hope Center in Buffalo. October 4th, Ethel M. Del Monte, grandmother of Samantha Naska, assistant principal at Hillary Park Elementary School, number 27. October 11th, Thomas Brinkworth, father of former BPS Chief of Police and Security, Kevin Brinkworth. October 16th, Don Ort, father-in-law of Kathy Ort, retired assistant principal of Lorraine Academy, and uncle of Paula Grady, who was our temporary supervisor of pupil personnel services. October 19th, Rashawn Nicole King, daughter of Assembly Speaker and great friend to the district, Crystal D. Peoples Stokes. We have a moment in memory of all of their passings. Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mr. Petrucci. May their souls rest in peace. Okay. So, board members, we need to go into executive session. May I have a motion to go into executive session to discuss potential litigation related to the approval of Buffalo Commons Charter School to discuss the negotiations of a contract with Spectrum for the purpose of obtaining legal advice regarding a contract that has been previously approved by this board? Paulette, second. Jen, we get them blue, they're coming through. All in favor?
Aye.
Any exceptions? Okay, thank you. All right, so we'll. How about if we take a, what, five-minute break so that Mike Lucci can clear the phones?
That sounds great.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Oh, oh, oh. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.